Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, greetings, dear friends, in the precious name of our wonderful Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. What a joy it is to have you with us today on Stand in the Gap Today. I am Gary Dahl, and along with me, Pete Wiebe is co-hosting the program today. Sam and Dave are still away, and one of these days we'll have all three of us back at the same time. I think tomorrow Sam will be back on the program with me as well. But we have a great program today. We have with us Rick Saccone, who is running for the United States Senate out of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And as we always do every other week, we have George Barna with us as the Executive Director of the American Culture and Faith Institute. And so we have a good program lined up for you. As we talk to Rick today, we are going to be speaking to him about his decision to run for the United States Senate, and specifically discuss why he has chosen to run and why it is significant for Christians to get involved in government. Then we will speak with George Barna of the American Culture and Faith Institute regarding his recent survey, which reveals how many adults have a biblical worldview. You know, ladies and gentlemen, we talk about the biblical worldview a lot on this radio program, and we know that it's very important for Christians to have a biblical worldview, but you may be surprised to find out how few Christians, including how few pastors, even have a biblical worldview. So you'll want to stay tuned today as we chat with George Barna about this. But we want to go to Rick Saccone. Rick, welcome to Stand in the Gap today, my friend.
Thank you very much. It's good to stand in the gap.
It is indeed. It's a delight to have you with us today, and I was honored to be at your announcement in the rotunda there in Harrisburg on Monday. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of that important day in your life. And I was really pleased, Rick, to see the size of the crowd and the enthusiasm that was there.
Yes, thank you for doing that for me. And I was pleased also. We had a lot of great people showed up. I think we all had a good time. We got them riled up a little bit and excited to go out and work hard to defeat the current pro-choice liberal senator that we have down in Washington, D.C.
Who happens to be Robert Casey.
Correct.
In case people don't know who he is, I just thought I'd put his name there. For the sake of it. Anyway, Rick, you are a veteran of the United States military, an author, a former broadcaster in South Korea. By the way, folks, that is an interesting fact about Rick that we won't really get into today, but I find it very interesting. You are also a professor at St. Vincent College in Pennsylvania. You are a member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, and now you've announced that you're going to run for the United States Senate. Rick, you have a lot of experience in a lot of areas, and you could do and do a lot of things. But why have you decided to run for the United States Senate at this point in time?
Well, it's very simple. It's actually the same reason that caused me to run for the State House. At that time, I looked at the person that was in that office, and it's a long-term career politician who wasn't representing the people of our district, and I thought it was time for that person to move on, and that's what I see at the federal level. We have a very liberal, pro-choice senator who's strayed from the values that he was originally elected for, and I don't believe he represents the new agenda that the people voted in last November. In fact, he's up there actively undermining and subverting that agenda. And so I feel like it's time for me to stand in the gap and have him move along.
Rick, this is Keith. I am thrilled that you're running. Thank you so much for being willing to take that plunge. And I really think it's important to run against someone whose values do not reflect American values and who, as you indicated, has even betrayed the values of the people that he represents. But as a believer, what's your goal when you get to the Senate? What kind of a persona would you like to portray there? What kind of a platform, if you please, would characterize your time there?
So, I intend to support the agenda that we all voted in last November, which is, it's not Donald Trump's agenda, it's our agenda, and that's smaller government, lower taxes, reducing government regulation, protecting the unborn, rebuilding our military, taking care of our veterans, fighting ISIS, enhancing our Second Amendment rights, encouraging small business. Those are all things that the people of Pennsylvania voted for, and they need a person that will honestly bring those values to the U.S. Senate to represent them well. And that's what I intend to do. That's the platform I'm running on, and that's what I intend to do. And as a believer, I believe it's important that we bring values of honesty and integrity and reliability and responsibility, things that people have felt that the government has been lacking in for the last number of years. I don't know how many years, but the people feel that they've been betrayed and let down by their government, and they have in many cases. And I intend to restore the honesty and integrity and reform government the best way I can.
You know, Rick, there are many Christians who say, well, I don't want anything to do with government, and they do everything that they can to run from government. But why is it significant that Christians get involved in government these days, and particularly do what you're doing, run for office, even high offices in the land?
I think many Christians make the mistake of thinking if they just ignore government, it'll go away. But let me tell you, being in state government, I can see it all the time. You and your churches are all involved with government every day, whether you have to get a permit to fix the bathroom in the church, or whether you've got to get a background check for the people that work there. There's all kinds of things that the government is affecting your lives and your church's lives. And if you don't get involved in government, the government will get involved in you, and you won't like the result. The government will run over you, and you won't have any say in it. And so we Christians have to stand up and make sure that they have a say in their government, and that they're protecting their rights and our religious liberties, which are being trampled on every day across this nation. And if we don't speak out, those liberties will be taken away. You can see it day after day, case after case.
You know, just a bit of a follow-up, Rick, on what Gary was asking you. You know, not just the people that ignore government. My concern is people that are otherwise conservative where the Word of God is concerned. They believe in the gospel. They preach Christ as pastors. But they kind of have the idea that Christians need to kind of keep a little bit of a distance from government. Sometimes I hear it said they're afraid of making politics into a religion. How would you respond to those people in encouraging them to their proper role where government's concerned?
Well, I think it's just exactly what I just said. You have to be. God has set out a plan for us. He wants godly men and women in all aspects of life. He wants them people who will rule with the fear of God in them to rule over us. And if they don't, then the evil side will take over, and government will control and run over the good people. And so they have to stand up. That's just part of it. If you don't have good people in government, then you'll have bad people in government. Mm-hmm. And when bad people are reigning over us, the people will not be happy.
Rick, it's a delight to have you with us. We're up against a hard break here, but how could people get in touch with you and follow you? Do you have a website that you could give, please?
We do. They can go to ricksaccone.com. They can go to my Facebook page, Rick Saccone for U.S. Senate. Or they can also send Patriots for Saccone. They can donate through that, and the address is on the website. And I hope people across the country will join our campaign and join our cause to defeat this liberal senator.
Okay.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' Editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
Up next, Dr. Carol Swain with 2 minutes to think about it. From high school dropout and teenage mother to esteemed Vanderbilt University political science and law professor, Carol examines the religious significance of today's most pressing issues and courageously exposes the cultural forces that threaten our cherished values and principles.
Hello, folks. Well, just when you thought you'd heard it all in the world of politics, along comes the witches, the witches' lobby, or whichever you want to call them. Just make sure you take them seriously. A number of news services are reporting that the witch community is asking its practitioners to perform a monthly binding ritual until President Trump is removed from office. A representative of the witches' community told the Huffington Post that he considers their move as, quote, self-defense. So are we going to see the president resign amid scandal, impeachment, or some other incredible, unforeseen event thanks to efforts of the witches? Well, that spokesman, Michael M. Hughes, seems to be giving himself and his organization some occultic wiggle room. Quote, if people feel more empowered and less beaten down, that's valid. As I said in the beginning, we should not laugh at the efforts of these people. As Christian believers, it should be a lesson. These folks believe what they practice. Do we? If we believe true power and authority lie in the hands of God only, we should be praying for the president, not with trepidation, but with joy and great expectations, just as one prophet of God, Elijah, had victory over all the prophets of Baal. Christ will be victorious over all the powers of darkness, no matter what forms it might take.
Learn more about Dr. Carol Swain at BeThePeopleTV.com, CarolMSwain.net, and on Facebook at Professor Carol M. Swain, Ph.D.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. What a delight it is to have you with us today. And I do want to encourage you to get Dr. Rick Saccone's book entitled God in Our Government. It's a tremendous book to show us how God was involved in the lives of so many of our founders. It's entitled God in Our Government by Dr. Rick Saccone. And you can get that at Amazon. I encourage you to pray for Rick as, again, he's a Christian who is running for the United States Senate. He holds a biblical worldview, and he wants to take that to Washington with him. So be in prayer with for Dr. Rick Saccone. Well, George Barna, it's a delight to have you back with us in the program today, my friend. You've been quite busy recently from what you've told us before we went on the air.
Yeah, I'm down here in Orlando at the National Religious Broadcasters event. This is something they do every year, and they bring together many of the radio and television and even some of the online and print ministries from across the country. So it's quite an event, a lot of great speakers, and I've been able to do a number of media appearances, talking talking about this new study that we just released a couple days ago.
Yes, and that new study is how many adults have a biblical worldview. You know, ladies and gentlemen, according to the American Culture and Faith Institute, of course, George is the executive director of that, more than 100 million adults in America claim to have a biblical worldview. The question is, do they really have a biblical worldview? But, George, before you answer that question, as we progress here today, there are many types of worldviews in our culture. I just want us to lay the foundation at the very beginning of the interview here and ask how you would define a worldview.
Well, yeah, it's important that people's eyes not glaze over right away because we're talking about worldview. I know it's one of those $10 words, but really it's a very simple and very important concept. Everybody has a worldview. You need to have a worldview just to get by from day to day. A worldview is essentially the mental framework or the mental filter that we have that helps us to understand and interpret and respond to the world. And so what that worldview does is it takes in information, puts it through the filter, and it helps us determine what is the most appropriate choice for us to make based on what we determine for us to be right or wrong, true or false, important, unimportant, good, bad. It becomes our discernment mechanism. And so we've all got a worldview, but the real important question for us to ask and then answer is not, do you have a worldview? We know the answer to that. Yes, you do. But the question is, which one do you have? Because there are many different ones. I mean, there's a lot that you've probably heard of, postmodernism, secular humanism, existentialism, pantheism. You know, the list goes on and on with all these worldviews. But, of course, the one that we would be most interested in is whether or not people have a biblical worldview. And that's where basically what you've done is you've gone back to God's Word. And you're relying upon that, the principles that are embedded in what God has supplied to us as the appropriate way to live, to help inform our worldview, to help us make those decisions about what is good or what is bad, what is evil, what is holy, and so forth.
So, George, as you're assessing a person's worldview, aren't you talking about discernment, about understanding? You know, so it sounds to me like you're looking at a person's worldview, especially for purposes of your survey, in more than just in terms of what they say they believe. It sounds to me like the way they act out those beliefs, their actions, application, it sounds to me like those must have an important part of it as well.
Yeah, you know, Keith, you're absolutely right. In this survey, we did something different from most worldview surveys that have been done up to this point, including the ones that I've done in the past. Typically, worldview surveys just look at beliefs, and they say, look, if you have biblical beliefs to all of these questions we've asked, then we'll say you have a biblical worldview. But in this particular survey, what we did was we had both beliefs and behaviors that we tested. So we had 20 different beliefs that we tested. We had 20 different behaviors that we tested. And the reason that we wanted to have both of those in there is because we know that people do what they believe. But we also know that people tell us that they believe things, that then when you measure or observe their behavior, that behavior isn't consistent with the beliefs. So it's one thing to say that you believe something. It's another thing to prove that you believe that through your behavior. When Jesus was with his apostles, he wasn't always saying to me, hey, tell me what you believe. More often than that, he was observing and he was training their behavior. Because remember, ultimately, in John, he said to them, you will be my true disciples when you bear fruit. In other words, it's what you do that produces godly outcomes that really makes you a disciple. Our beliefs have a key role in that, but it's the behavior that proves that those beliefs exist.
You know, George, as a follow-up to that, I would be curious if you could give us a sample of one of the questions that relates to a belief, and perhaps a companion to that that relates to their practice. I know we can't go through all 20 on each side, but I think our listeners might be interested in just a sample of that, give them an idea of just how this works.
Yeah, you know, and I think one of the great things about doing that is it will show people that this was not one of those gotcha kind of experiences where we're trying to prove that people's theology is wrong. And it's not one of those highfalutin theological things where it's like a theology 701 class in grad school. This is really Bible 101 kind of stuff. So the kinds of beliefs that we were looking at had to do with what people believe about the Bible. Do they believe that it's, you know, the Word of God that can be trusted in teaching accurate life principles? Mm-hmm. Do they believe that God is the all-knowing, all-powerful God of the universe? Do they believe that Jesus lived on earth, and even though he was human, he never sinned? Do they believe that Satan exists? Do they believe that the Holy Spirit exists? And then there were other kinds of questions that had to do with things like success. What's the most important thing that you consider when you're trying to figure out whether or not your life is a success? And in that question, we gave people 9 different choices. And one of them was, my success in life depends on the level of commitment and obedience to God. You know, we know for something like that, two out of 10 Americans, just 19%, said that's how they determine their success in life. But that's what the Bible teaches us. And then when we look at behaviors, we were looking at how people apply these things. So, for instance, in moral situations, if somebody came to them and they were in a situation and they wanted advice on what to do, would we tell them that there are instances when it's moral to lie? Would we tell them that there are going to be situations where having an abortion is an appropriate or moral behavior? You know, we went through all kinds of things, divorce, same-sex marriage, pornography, cheating on taxes, you know, you name it. And then we had other kinds of behaviors, too. But the idea was to say, okay, are people actually translating the things they believe that the Bible teaches into actions that give us a lifestyle that is discernibly different in our culture today?
You know, George, this is very important stuff, and I encourage every one of our listeners to listen very carefully because, you know, a number of years ago, maybe just in the last year, I read a survey that indicated that when you put both believers and unbelievers into the same barrel, as it were, the lifestyle of many believers is very similar to the lifestyle of unbelievers. And of course, that would indicate that, number one, they don't have a biblical worldview as believers. And that's very, very dangerous as it relates to the lifestyle that we are supposed to be living for the Lord in the culture around us, is it not?
Absolutely. And we find that very same thing even in this survey. We tried to correlate, for instance, some of the lifestyle choices that people are making with whether or not they have a biblical worldview. And what we found was that those who have a biblical worldview, for instance, are 9 times more likely than people without a biblical worldview to be a pro-life advocate. They're 18 times more likely than people without a biblical worldview to reject same-sex marriage as an appropriate lifestyle or behavior. They are 3 or 4 times more likely to reject the viewing of pornography as something that's morally acceptable. And I've got a whole list of things where we can look at this. And note that I'm talking that this is not 9 percentage points different, not 18 percentage points difference. We're talking 9 times or 18 times or 4 times more likely. That is a huge difference, which begins to show just how incredibly significant it is to have a biblical worldview. And as you say, my research over the years has shown that for the most part, the lifestyles of church-going people and those of people who don't go to church are differentiated on very few attributes.
Well, that's a very, very sad thing. And of course, we asked the question, why is it important for Christians to have a biblical worldview? And the answer to that is to be a proper representative of Jesus Christ. The Bible teaches us that we are his ambassadors. We are to speak for him. We are to live for him. And if Christians do not have the biblical worldview, then that's going to be an impossibility to do. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break. We are talking to George Barna. And after we come back from this break, We are going to talk about the evaluation of people's worldview. Though there are over 100 million adults in America that claim to have a biblical worldview, the real question is, do they really have a biblical worldview? In our discussion with George Barna, we're going to come to the answer to that question, so you will not want to go away. We're going to take about a three-minute break, and then we will be back with George Barna, Keith Wiebe. I'm Gary Dahl. Stay tuned. Don't go away.
Fox News Radio, I'm Pam Husso. Top Democrats want him out.
For the good of the country, Attorney General Sessions should resign.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, other lawmakers believe Attorney General Jeff Sessions should at least recuse himself from an investigation into Russian meddling in the election.
I think he answered that question this morning, which is if he himself is the subject of an investigation, of course he would. But if he's not, I don't see any purpose or reason to doing this.
House Speaker Paul Ryan, during his confirmation hearing, Sessions did not disclose two meetings with Russia's ambassador. He maintains they did not talk about President Trump's campaign. Another White House cabinet nominee okayed by the Senate.
The yeas are 58, nays are 41, and the nomination is confirmed.
Ben Carson will lead the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Fox News, we report, you decide.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gere with today's Family Update. I'm in the midst of reading a new book called Gosnell, the story of America's most prolific serial killer. As you've probably guessed, it's about Dr. Kermit Gosnell, the West Philadelphia abortionist who's now serving a life sentence for the gruesome atrocities he committed against women and babies at his Philadelphia clinic. I know the story well, and we helped successfully pass legislation to try and prevent another such house of horrors from ever arising again. That's why I'm so disgusted with our current governor, Tom Wolf, who this past week stood just 2 miles from the site of Gosnell's former clinic and held a press conference where he denounced Senate Bill 3. That bill would stop all brutal dismemberment abortions and end all abortions after 20 weeks. The Gosnell book demonstrates how Governor Tom Ridge helped enable Gosnell, and under Tom Wolf's mindset, we would open the door to even more Gosnells. That's just terrible.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you ever miss any portion of this particular program or any other program altogether, perhaps, I would encourage you to go to our Stand in the Gap Radio website, which is www.standinthegapradio.com. Because there you can get the archives of this particular program and other programs, and I would encourage you indeed do that, because as I said, we give so much information on this program, and it's important for you as it relates to your biblical worldview and living out that biblical worldview. And of course, that's the topic of our discussion today with George Barna. And I mentioned before we took the break that though there are over 100 million adults in America that claim, and the key word is claim, to have a biblical worldview, the real question is, do they really have a biblical worldview, or are they deceived by their own thinking? Now, George, in your survey, I believe you say that you interviewed 6,000 people from three distinct populations. the general public, the theologically conservative Protestant pastors, and then the sage cons. And so I'd like for us to take a closer look at how the survey actually turned out. And so my first question to you is this. In your findings, how many American adults truly do maintain a biblical worldview, and how have you come to that conclusion?
Well, overall, if we look at the general population, meaning all adults 18 years of age or older, what we found was 10% have a biblical worldview. And in the research, we're calling these people integrated disciples. And using that term, what we really mean is these are people who have integrated their beliefs and their behavior to form a lifestyle that imitates that of Christ. The idea of integration is that you're blending the two things together into one. And what are you trying to become? You're trying to become a disciple, which means that you're a follower of or an imitator of someone. So what we want to be are people who are able to blend together our beliefs with our behavior so that our lifestyle is one that reflects what Jesus might do if he were here in the same situations. We want to be living that way. So in America, 10% of adults are integrated disciples. Now, that compares to the 46% who think that they have a biblical worldview. So you can see there's a huge gap. More than a third of the population in America thinks that they have a biblical worldview when, in point of fact, they don't. So that's a very significant thing, because later on, if we're going to work with people and we're trying to assess their worldview, we want to help them grow in their worldview, there are going to be a lot of people who don't even appear open to the conversation because they think they've already got it figured out, when in point of fact, they don't.
George, that's a fascinating statistic, 10% versus 46%. Can you put that in terms that of numbers? How many people in our population might those represent? I think that might give us a clearer perspective.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about 10% of the adult population currently is about 244 million people. So we're looking at roughly 24 million Americans who have a biblical worldview, compared to roughly 120 million Americans who think they have a biblical worldview. So the difference is huge. But, you know, keep in mind also, we're working with 244 million people total. So it's not just that 36% who think they have a worldview but don't have one that we need to be concerned about. We also need to be concerned about the other 54% who don't say they have a biblical worldview, and sadly, they're right.
You know, it is so sad to see how few people really do have a biblical worldview, George. And I remember a couple of years ago, I personally conducted a survey here in central Pennsylvania, where I live, of Christian schools. And I was actually preaching on developing a biblical worldview. It was about a six-week series in the church that I serve. And so I was trying to find out what Christian schools teach, simply because of the fact that we believe in biblical education. Biblical education is very, very important. We talk about that a lot on this particular program. But what I found, George, is that most of the schools that I interviewed would say, yes, we teach the biblical worldview. Then I would follow up the question with, well, what are the ingredients of that? How do you teach the biblical worldview to your students in your Christian day school? And do you know, George, some of them did not have an answer to that. They said, well, we teach the Bible. Or some said, well, we have chapel once a week. And so my question to you, as it relates to this particular question and as it relates to this subject, what do you find, or are you able to tell us what you might have found about the development, the teaching of the Christian world, the biblical worldview in the Christian day school? I find that it's limited there. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, we've actually participated in some research in the past where we've studied different forms of schooling. And what we discovered is that Christian schools, some of them do a fabulous job.
But overall, what we find is that they're probably not performing at the level that many parents who are enrolling their students are hoping will be the case. And I think this goes back to the same problem that we have in a lot of our households, our Christian households. You know, when we look, and let me throw out another number for you out of the research, and that's that when we look at born-again Christians, what we found is only 31% of them have a biblical worldview. Now, that's important because that means that if you are a born-again parent, you're trying to raise your kids, there's, in two-thirds of cases, those cases with those households, those parents don't have a biblical worldview to give to their kids. And I think it's the very same issue that we may find in a lot of our schools, certainly in a lot of our colleges and universities, where the people who are teaching, even if they want to have that kind of worldview taught, they may not know how to do that because they don't have it themselves.
Yeah, I think that's so spot on, George, that we can't really teach that of which we are not a faithful and consistent practitioner. Yeah, as I read that survey, one question that came to my mind was wondering if your research gives you any feel for how the number of people who have a biblical worldview has changed through the years. I'm pretty sure it's less now than it was, but do you have any research that gives an idea of what kind of drift we're looking at?
Yeah, you know, because we developed this survey very differently than other ones have been done, looking at both beliefs and behavior, using more questions than other worldview surveys have used. They're not really comparable, so I can't give an apples-to-apples comparison. But when I look at the questions that we had in our current survey, that I also had in a survey, worldview survey, we did about a decade ago, what I find is that the numbers tend to be the same or a little bit lower now. So I think you're right. The pattern is probably, although we can't put definitive numbers to it because of the change in the data collection instrument, the numbers probably are a bit lower. There's no evidence whatsoever that would point to the fact that things are getting better in terms of America's worldview.
Hmm. Well, that's serious as well, that they're not getting better. And, of course, it doesn't surprise me, but it's a very serious situation. Well, let's make a shift here a little bit, and we may have to carry this over into the next segment, George, but that's okay. But we talked about the fact that in this survey, you focused on three distinct populations, the general public, theologically conservative Protestant pastors, and then the Sage Cons that we speak of so many times on this particular program with you. And so, if you would please, among the three distinct populations that you interviewed, what did your survey reveal with each one of those individual population?
Well, as we mentioned, with the national population, all adults 18 and over overall, only 10% have a biblical worldview. Now, the good news is when we interviewed a national sample of theologically conservative Protestant pastors, what we found was 88% have a biblical worldview. Not perfect, but at least we can say, look, if we've got roughly 100,000 churches across the country where we have those pastors teaching, preaching, and leading, well, in maybe 88,000 of those or so, we know that they're going to be able to convey and to be promoting a biblical worldview because they get it. But most encouraging of all to me were the Sage Cons, because when we did that survey with the spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives who are Christians, we discovered that 90% of them, 90, have a biblical worldview, even higher than we saw among the pastors. So we found that to be very encouraging, and that should be encouraging to everybody, because certainly this shows, you know what, if you commit yourself to the process and you're consistent in pursuing God's word and his ways, you can, in fact, have that kind of worldview and live that kind of life.
My question is, out of the pastors, you say 88% have a biblical worldview and are qualified as integrated disciples. My question would be, how many of them really preach the biblical worldview over their pulpit? And I know we don't have the time to answer that now, but maybe we can when we get into the next session or segment,
sure.
Excuse me. Glad to have you with us, folks. When we take a, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, George Barna will continue to talk to us about the concept of the biblical worldview, and we're going to look at various population segments in the biblical worldview, so stay tuned. Good information. You'll not want to miss it. We'll be back right after these messages.
I'm sitting here right now looking at the beautiful, full-color Founders Bible. In addition to the trustworthy New American Standard text, it contains original historical artwork, as well as 64 full-color insert pages, 150 biographies or insightful quotes from the founders, and 450 pages of embedded commentary highlighting biblical insights. This beautiful leather-bound volume produced by historian David Barton has a gold-embossed APN logo on the front. It can be yours this month as you support APN with a gift of $250 or more. To see it and make your gift, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. If you can't send $250 right now, we'd still like to hear from you. In gratitude for a gift of any amount, we'll send you a wonderful audio CD by Sam Rohr entitled God's Plan for a Blessed Nation. It will bless and challenge you. Let us hear from you today. Remember, all gifts to APN are tax deductible. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
Ladies plan to attend the Montgomery County Republican Women's Leadership School on Saturday, March 4th from 9 to noon. Topics will include campaign strategy, planning, fundraising, and more. If you are a candidate thinking about becoming a candidate or interested in helping with a campaign, a political vendor, or a consultant, this event is for you. Past attendees have successfully won elections. The meeting will be held at Whitpain Township Building, 960 Wentz Road, Bluebell. For more information, contact Nancy Becker at 267-481-0500.
A popular government without popular information or the means of acquiring it is but a prologue to a farce or a tragedy, or perhaps both. Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives. A quote from James Madison.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. I'm in the midst of reading a new book called Gosnell, the story of America's most prolific serial killer. As you've probably guessed, it's about Dr. Kermit Gosnell, the West Philadelphia abortionist who's now serving a life sentence for the gruesome atrocities he committed against women and babies at his Philadelphia clinic. I know the story well, and we helped successfully pass legislation to try and prevent another such house of horrors from ever arising again. That's why I'm so disgusted with our current governor, Tom Wolf, who this past week stood just 2 miles from the site of Gosnell's former clinic and held a press conference where he denounced Senate Bill 3. That bill would stop all brutal dismemberment abortions and end all abortions after 20 weeks. The Gosnell book demonstrates how Governor Tom Ridge helped enable Gosnell, and under Tom Wolf's mindset, we would open the door to even more Gosnells. That's just terrible.
You're listening to WFYL 1180, working for your liberty and things that matter. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And once again, we are talking to George Barna, as we do normally every other Thursday here in Standing in the Gap today. And today we are talking about his recent survey on how many adults have a biblical worldview, which, to be honest with you folks, I think is probably the most important discussion that we've had on this program, because when Christians have a biblical worldview, then everything else will turn out properly. If Christians do not have a biblical worldview, then things are just going to go haywire. And unfortunately, that's what we've seen so much of the time in our country today. Yea, indeed, in our churches, in our Christian schools, and even in our families. Now, Keith, you say that you have a follow-up question for George. Go ahead, sir.
You know, I do, George. We were talking about the small number of believers who actually have a biblical worldview as verified by your survey, as opposed to those who claim to. And yet the large percentage of conservative pastors, conservative Protestant pastors, whom the survey revealed actually did have. I'm wondering about the disparity between those two numbers. I'm wondering why. Is it because pastors aren't addressing this, or are they doing so ineffectively, or are people just not paying attention? What's going on?
Well, I think when we talk about a nation as large as ours, there's all kinds of reasons. But one of the most consistent things that we've seen come out of the research over the years is that the difficulty is not that people in America need more information. It's not like they've never heard teaching or preaching or stories about the nature of God or about the reliability of the Bible or about so many of these other things that are critical to our building a biblical worldview. The issue that we've identified is that we're not doing a very good job of connecting the dots between that information and what it has to do with who we are and how we live. So what difference does it make that God is holy? What difference does it make that he knows everything? What difference does it make that he's involved in our lives today? What difference does it make that he gave us life as a gift with a purpose? I mean, all of those things have direct translations into the kind of lifestyle that we ought to be developing. And yet what we find is in our churches, people are not coming away with that kind of insight. We did the study that we talked about on Stand in the Gap last summer, I guess it was, during the midst of the election cycle, when we did a big national survey among Sage Cons. And these are people who are Bible savvy, and yet they said that they were virtually begging their pastors to teach them to think biblically about the issues being discussed in the election. So when it comes to things like immigration and poverty and war and taxes and terrorism and the role of government and abortion, all of these things matter. And they say that they want to engage in the process, but they don't feel that they've been equipped biblically to know how biblical principles apply to all those kinds of issues. Mm. So as a consequence of that, they're not engaging with the culture. So even people who want to take a biblical worldview or biblical principles, at least, into the culture, so they haven't been taught how to think sufficiently that they can engage in those kinds of conversations and debates so that they can have a positive impact.
You know, George,
it's a lot.
Yeah, it does. And George, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because in focus groups done with Christian school kids by our own American Pastors Network research staff, when asked to name some Christian values amongst kids in Christian schools, they had a very hard time recalling any Christian values at all. That's sad, isn't it?
Well, it is. And, you know, David Barton and I wrote a book called U-Turn a year ago, where we, in part of the book, what we did was we compared the values of colonial Americans with the values of contemporary Americans. And it's almost two completely different lists. When you look at the colonial values, they're all right out of the Bible. Hmm. And then when you look at contemporary values, it's all right out of the movies that Hollywood is producing. you know, about sexual fulfillment and personal happiness and financial comfort and everything else. Those are the values that people are seeking today. We've completely missed the boat in terms of what God has created us for, what brings him glory and honor and joy, and consequently, what should give us that same kind of joy. Mm.
You know, in your survey, you indicated that the younger an adult is, the less likely they are to have a biblical worldview. My question is, what does that say about the future? I mean, as we go forward from where we are today, do we see a greater development or a demise of the biblical worldview? And if it's the demise, what must we do to reverse this trend?
Yeah, Gary, I think that's a great question to be asking right now, because when you look at how a worldview develops, we know that it develops typically between the ages of about 18 months old and 13 years old. Now, a lot of people will be shocked just by that, because they think, well, you know, you develop your worldview when you're an adult and you're really thinking and you're concerned about these things. No, your worldview is almost set in stone by the age of 13. It gets reshaped and refined a little bit during the teen years. But once we reach our 20s, what our research has found and other institutes have as well, what happens is you essentially become an evangelist for your own worldview. Why? Because you think, well, I've figured it out now. I know what I think is good and right and proper and appropriate and important and so forth. And I want other people to buy into my way of thinking. And so they try to persuade others to think that. So recognizing that that worldview is developed primarily when you're a child, and recognizing that there are three dominant influences on that developmental process, those being parents, the media, and the government through its laws and policies, we have to be looking at this younger generation, the millennials, where only 4% have a biblical worldview. And we have to be asking the question, well, if 24 out of 25 millennials don't have a biblical worldview, how are they going to instill that in their children? And the answer is they can't. And then we look at the media, and we recognize that children up through the end of high school, on average, will be exposed to about 16,000 hours of media. You know, that's all kinds of messages that they're taking in. Are the media going to teach our children a biblical worldview? Absolutely not. Then we look at the government, man's laws. You know, are they going to provide a biblical worldview? And a lot of people would object to say, but wait a minute, you can't legislate morality. Hey, wake up. That's exactly what the law does.
That's right.
It's an attempt to tell us what's right or wrong. That's what morality is. So is a law, a government that puts laws into practice, that allows abortion, that facilitates same-sex marriage, is that going to be teaching our children a biblical worldview? No way. So really, I think the challenge here is for those of us who have a biblical worldview to recognize we have to be coming alongside these younger families. We have to be active in our churches and our communities and our government, and yes, even in the media, to be sure that a biblical worldview gets a hearing.
Absolutely. Well, George, this was a great survey, and folks, you need to see this because we only touched the tip of the iceberg. Quickly, George, let people know how they can see this survey in its completion, please.
Yeah, if people will go to our website at culturefaith.com, we'll not only have reports up there about the data, but we will be putting the 40 questions up there, and they can even see how they do on those as well.
Okay. Repeat that again, please, the address.
It's culturefaith.com.
Okay. Thank you, George Barna. Glad to have you with us today. Folks, we will be back in 23 hours. Join us then.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
Live from beautiful West Norriton Township, this is AM 1180.